This week on Making Contact.
Before, women did not have a say whatsoever. We women were humiliated. But after the EZLN, we began to understand that we all have rights.
I was like, well, there was a lot of women who achieved things. So I was like really proud of being a girl.
Indigenous women organizing throughout Central America focus simultaneously on issues of corporate globalization and their rights as women. On this program from the Women's Desk of the National Radio Project, women from Mexico and Honduras discuss their work. Each year, they heighten their activities during International Women's Day, so we'll also look at how that day is, or isn't, commemorated in the United States. I'm Lisa Rudman, your host this week on Making Contact, an international radio program seeking to create connections between people, vital ideas, and important information. In most of the world, women have pursued our specific rights in conjunction with battles for social, economic, and racial justice for all. In the last several decades, public awareness has increased regarding women's participation in national liberation movements. The context for women's particular demands has shifted since the 1980s, with the increasing integration of the world's economies, commonly referred to as globalization. Correspondent Luz Ruiz reports from Chiapas, Mexico, where she spoke with indigenous women. They are raising consciousness about sexism while opposing the imposition of what is known as economic liberalization.
On January 1st of 1994, the Zapatista National Liberation Army rose up in arms in Chiapas, Mexico, with black ski masks and red bandanas to cover their faces, demanding liberty, democracy, and justice. They also included a statement regarding women. The Revolutionary Law of Women stipulates that women have basic human rights to education, health, food, political participation, work, and to be free of violence. This law brings attention to the great problems indigenous women face in Chiapas and gives us a picture of the efforts they are working on to slowly build a world of peace, autonomy, and dignity. Women's roles in the Zapatista movement are diverse and range from their participation inside the guerrilla army as military officers, insurgents, or leaders, to working within other social, political, and economic spaces within the community of support bases. Here, women participate as education or health promoters, or in trade collectives as organizers and vendors for the different products they produce. Patricia, a Zeltal indigenous woman who holds the role of regional women's coordinator for the Zapatista Autonomous Community 10th of April, talks about the obstacles and fears she had to overcome when she began to participate actively in the role women from her community have granted her.
Sometimes we're embarrassed to participate. It's not that we don't know how to, but we feel embarrassed because that's how I felt when I started to work as a women's coordinator in all the places I had to go and the gatherings and rallies. I sometimes see other compañeras and they ask me how my work is going, how I feel, and I tell them that I'm afraid, but they tell me not to be afraid, that I have to do the work and go ahead and stand up. And in that way, they give me strength.
Women have particularly faced the consequences of the Mexican government's heavy military response to the uprising. They are affected by the military's introduction of prostitution, drug use, alcohol use, harassment, and rape into the communities. All these factors have opened up women's will, strength, and courage to defend their territories and communities by putting themselves in the front lines and confronting the federal military. Hillary Klein, who has worked with women's groups and indigenous communities in San Cristobal de las Casas, talks about the military's response to the women who defend the communities and the way Zapatista women go about these actions.
It doesn't mean they're not at risk. Women have been beaten up, women have been tortured, women have been arrested as well. But there is this kind of sense, because of the public response, that the Mexican military is much less likely to violently repress a group of women who are unarmed than a group of men. And so many times what's happened, if the military wants to enter a community or attack a community, the women will basically organize and form like a human chain or just go out and defend their community, but peacefully in the sense that they don't have weapons, they just go out there, but they're aggressive in the sense that they yell at the army. They say, we don't want you here, you have no right to be here. Sometimes they bring sticks with them, but they basically are defending themselves, their communities, their families, their children. And a lot of times it's just with the presence of their rage and their sort of moral indignation that the soldiers have no right to be there. And they just go out there and they form like a human wall. And many times they've successfully driven the army out or kept the army from entering their communities.
The low-intensity war context they live in, where militarization, marginalization, and lately, efforts by Mexico's current president, Vicente Fox, to seal and push forward large-scale economic development plans, give their struggle and demands as women the distinction of not only pushing for women's equality or liberation, but criticizing the neoliberal economic policies that oppress women in particular ways. For example, the proposed Free Trade Area of the Americas and the Plan Puebla-Panamá, which could push indigenous women into low-wage factory work. Yolanda Castro, from the Highlands Region Alliance of Civil Society and Resistance, an organization that works with indigenous communities throughout Chiapas, comments on the impact the Zapatista struggle against neoliberalism and globalization has had around the world and how women within the autonomous communities have understood it.
Esta lucha contra el ALCA, contra lo que pasó, lo que ha pasado en Praga, lo que ha venido sucediendo a nivel internacional.
I believe this fight against the FTAA, against what has happened in Prague, what has been happening on an international level, is because of the contributions of the EZLN. Now, here, on a state level, in the events called upon in the Zapatista struggle against neoliberalism, Zapatista women have been trying to understand this concept. In order to explain neoliberalism to other women, they've been talking and discussing it amongst themselves.
She adds that the ways women have been particularly preparing themselves on these and related issues has had a positive effect on their everyday lives.
Desde lo que están construyendo las mismas mujeres.
I also believe that from what women are constructing, along with men, but especially in women's collective and personal efforts to remain autonomous, they have been organizing even before the Plan Puebla-Panamá, which is just another response of neoliberal policies, another expression of globalization. I believe Zapatista women from 1994 to this day have been taking small steps in health, education, and collective production issues. These small community regional efforts in their everyday lives have contributed to give substance to their understanding of autonomy. I believe this is a great inspiration for other women and for themselves.
In 2001, throughout the historic Zapatista caravan to speak to Congress, women's problems and thoughts were addressed by Commanders Fidelia, Yolanda, Esther, and Susana. Especially memorable was when, in representation of all their compañeras, they took the limelight on March 8th. They commemorated International Women's Day and told the country and the rest of the world that indigenous women in Mexico live a triple marginalized condition, being women, being indigenous, and being poor. And they invited women all over the world to join forces and combat poverty. Their struggle and strength as Zapatista indigenous women in search for a better quality of life has resonated beyond the local communities, touching and inspiring women and men all over the world. Patricia, Regional Women's Coordinator for the Zapatista Autonomous Community, 10th of April, talks more about how their struggle is linked to the rest of the world.
De las mujeres estamos organizando es sobre la situación que de por sí no tenemos derecho antes para hablar, para participar y organizar. O sea, las mujeres no tienen.
What women are organizing around is that we didn't have any sort of rights to talk, to participate, to organize ourselves. Before, women did not have a say whatsoever. We women were humiliated. But after the EZLN, and as women called upon God, we began to understand that we all have rights. That's how we began to organize ourselves, and we are still struggling. Right now is not the first time we are sending a message to women from other countries, women from everywhere, to fight so that we can change our lives, or so that the government pays attention. One person alone cannot fight and succeed. It takes women from other nations and countries too. Because we now understand that there are poor people everywhere, and many countries haven't taken their women into account. What we want is to struggle together. We want the government to recognize us and understand our situation. And we want this for everyone, not only for one town or one country. That is the women's struggle here. Aprendiendo todos juntos vamos a pensar y a actuar para bien de nuestra comunidad.
From San Cristóbal de las Casas, Chiapas, this is Luz Ruiz.
As we come marching, marching, we bring the greater days. The rising of the women means the rising of the race. No more the drudge and idler, ten that toil where one reposes, but a sharing of life's glories, bread and roses, bread and roses.
Just as Zapatista women are making connections to their sisters globally, Indigenous women in Honduras want the world to know about what they call the privatization of their communities. As Judy Gerber reports, Berta Caceres helps organize her neighbors to oppose a hydroelectric project that she says will serve corporations rather than communities.
In the western region of Honduras, the indigenous Lenca people work through farmers' cooperatives, women's organizations, and student groups. Their goal? To get control of their land and struggle for women's rights. Berta Caceres is a representative of COPIN, the Civic Council of Indigenous and Popular Organizations in the region. 5 years ago, COPIN members uncovered plans to build the El Tigre Dam on their land.
Nosotros, dentro de el proceso de lucha del COPIN, una muy fuerte ha sido.
We're in a very difficult struggle. We're organizing around the fight against the construction of this El Tigre Dam, which would be built in the western region of the country in the border area with El Salvador. The studies estimate that as many as 20,000 families, and that would be campesinos and Lenca descendant people, would be displaced from their homes and their communities because of the flood basin of this dam. And that would obviously not only have an ecological impact, but it would have a cultural and economic impact.
Caceres says that the dam project had its start several years before COPIN found out about it.
Y este proyecto hace de casi ya 10 años que el gobierno de Honduras y El Salvador habían.
The roots of this project go back 10 years when the governments of Honduras and El Salvador entered into a binational agreement to permit the World Bank, Inter-American Development Bank, and USAID to proceed with their studies. But it wasn't until 5 years later that we started to learn through other sources of information that this was in the works.
La información sobre esta represa hidroeléctrica ha sido bastante secreta. Es considerada muy confidencial para el gobierno y los organismos financieros.
The dam project has been covered up with a huge mantle of secrecy by the government and the financial organizations. We condemn the anti-democratic nature of the whole process. We condemn the hypocrisy of institutions like the World Bank or Inter-American Development Bank. They are clearly not taking into consideration whatsoever indigenous communities and indigenous people. They have not come to have any process of dialogue and negotiation or consultation with the local populations. This is privatization of our communities.
Caceres says all of the negotiating initiatives have come from the popular movement. Only through COPIN's efforts have they been able to get the details about the dam.
Nosotros sabemos que se pueden hacer pequeñas represas que no tengan impactos ecológicos negativos.
In COPIN, we're quite prepared to talk with these development experts about how they could build a whole series of small, tiny dams around the communities where the people live and need sources of electrical power. They see this mega project dam in the context of what is called the Plan Puebla Panamá, which is a whole industrial maquiladora industry vision from Puebla, Mexico, down through Panama. This includes Honduras, where they're going to use something like the El Tigre Dam to create electrical energy for a series of maquiladora industries.
Copin's resistance to the El Tigre Dam is varied and includes direct action.
We've recently had mobilizations where as many as 1,000 campesinos and Lenca descendants from the western region have gone on trips to Tegucigalpa, the capital city, where we camp out for up to a month in front of the Congress, putting a direct pressure on them. Recently, some towers were built in and around the Rio Lempa area and some of the rivers that are feeder rivers into the Rio Lempa. And these are towers that were set up to do system-wide studies of the power and the flow of the water going through the rivers. A number of these towers have recently been destroyed by 1,000 men and women of Copin. We are demanding the government formally state that El Tigre Dam will not proceed.
We'll return to Berta Caceros in a moment. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you want more information about this week's program, visit our website at radioproject.org or call us at 1-800-529-5736. Millions of people around the world have been displaced by dam projects. Meanwhile, activists like Berta Caceres protest each year on March 14th, the International Day of Action Against Dams. Correspondent Judy Gerber reports on the temporary victory at El Tigre.
In the summer of 2001, the Honduran government bowed to popular demands and temporarily halted construction on the El Tigre Dam. As Copin continues its efforts to stop the project completely, the group furthers its other work aimed at empowering the lives of Honduran peasants. Issues that impact women are high on their list.
We start much of our discussion and analysis with the triple discrimination that women suffer. First, for being poor. Second, for being women. Third, for being indigenous.
Machismo, un sexismo, una discriminación institucionalizada, legalizada en nuestro país.
Sexism and machismo has been institutionalized and legalized in all aspects of our society. In our court systems, dominated by men, we're struggling to give legal recognition and value to the woman's testimony. This fight is just starting, so what's important is that we have begun to do this.
Caceres says that her group puts pressure on government authorities and addresses the very deep and structural nature of violence against indigenous Honduran women.
More efficient processes could exist so violators of women and children's rights could be more easily jailed. But this has to be accompanied by public denouncements to pressure the authorities.
Esa violencia estructural.
The violence is structural against women and more so indigenous women. It's political, institutional, economic policies that are particularly violent against women.
Structural violence faced by Lenca women and men gives a different meaning to the rhetoric of the new war on terrorism. While the U.S. media bombards people with the message that everything has changed since September 11th, Caceres disagrees.
Esta palabra de terrorismo ha significado mucho dolor, mucho luto para el pueblo centroamericano.
I've been saying that this word terrorism has been the source of much pain and suffering for Central American people. In the name of fighting terrorism over many years, our governments and the powerful sectors, the oligarchies and military sectors, have labeled all those people and organizations as terrorists, those who were fighting for human rights, who were fighting for the right to land, the right to minimum human rights, for peace, for justice.
Caceres adds that under the guise of anti-terrorism tactics, the government has built up its military presence in the areas where they plan to build dams. But even those developments are nothing truly new, says Caceres.
Debemos de tener muchas lecciones. Uno pues por lo acontecido aquí.
This statement that after September 11th everything has changed. Well, that's really not true. The same underlying problems of how the global order works in a very unjust way, they're still all there. The same repressions, discriminations, inequalities, and impoverishment. We need to understand this very clearly, that very little or nothing has changed since after September the 11th.
For the Women's Desk of the National Radio Project, I'm Judy Gerber.
Let's say, if just for one day, women were given recognition in the form of a holiday. Let's say, if just for one day, women were given recognition in the form of a holiday. Where would we be without women? Surely that thought alone deserves a little recognition.
Women, such as the indigenous activists in Mexico and Honduras, annually celebrate International Women's Day. They focus on women's oppression and resistance by holding protests and marches. The United Nations declared March 8th International Women's Day in 1975 to help push women's issues onto political agendas.
While $700 billion a year is spent on military budgets worldwide, less than $20 billion is spent on the essentials of life. We want protection against all violence inside the home. We want reassurance. It's safe to walk the streets alone. Mothers bring up babies, which in turn become our peers. They deserve one day off for the extra work throughout those years. We speak for all those women who feel they've had enough, because when women stop, everything stops.
International Women's Day is even a national holiday in several countries. In the United States, feminist organizers celebrate March 8th as part of their ongoing activism. Meanwhile, for most of the American public, the day is toned down as Women's History Month, focusing on women's past achievements. Correspondent Susan Chelly spoke with both middle school students and activists to see how this day is observed in the United States.
The United States does not officially recognize International Women's Day. That could be why many here don't realize that there is, in fact, a day set aside to commemorate the hardships and accomplishments of women. But at the Berkeley Unified School District, students can't help but be aware of International Women's Day. For them, it's a school holiday.
My name is Janet Ramsey, and I'm in 7th grade, and we have March 8th off because of International Women's Day. It's a day that recognizes women for their achievements and their goals that they've accomplished.
I'm Jamaica Mills Collins, and I'm in 8th grade. And I think that having National Women's Day is good because, all throughout the history of the world, men have been superior to women, or thought of superior to women. And there's a day recognizing Malcolm X and a day recognizing Martin Luther King. But if you think about it, women have done a lot too, and they go through a lot more than men go through. So having a National Women's Day just shows how much women have an impact on the world. And instead of having a single Women's Day like Rosa Parks Day, they have a Women's Day, showing that we're more together, you know, in a pack, we all want the world to be better.
International Women's Day sprouted from a turn-of-the-century demand for humane working conditions and decent pay. The date, March 8th, stemmed from a demonstration of New York women garment workers in 1908. A few years later, conditions for the workers went from dangerous to deadly.
Does anyone know a little bit more about the famous fire? It was called the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire.
I know it was on March 25th, 1911, at 4:30 p.m., and it was a 9-story building, and the fire was on the 8th floor. The fire ladder only reached to the 6th floor, so people on the 7th, 8th, and 9th floor, most of them jumped out of the windows because they didn't want to get burned.
Many were burned alive because the factory doors were locked. That fire killed 145 women, mostly immigrants. Girls, as young as 8, illegally worked at the Triangle Shirtwaist Company. The workers couldn't bear the 11-hour days with no heat or ventilation, dirty water to drink, and violent threats from supervisors. Rose Young, from Willard Middle School, commemorates International Women's Day by studying famous women.
Yeah, we did like the report type thing too. And I did Rosa Parks because I thought that was really cool what she did. And we just like we had to find research, and we brought in books about it, and we shared it with the class and everything, and everybody shared with the class, and it was really cool because, and I got to learn a lot more about other women because I didn't really know like about more women, and so the other girls who did like other things like that, I was like, whoa, there was a lot of women who achieved things, so I was like really proud of being a girl.
The classroom is one place to learn about International Women's Day. The streets are another. Activist Lori Nairn helps organize an annual global women's strike that internationally connects women and their concerns. Nairn gives an example of how the global strike is coordinated.
Argentina will draft a press release about their situation and will send it around the network, and different women work on it. You know, once we've all agreed on what the content of it should be, we all put it out in all our cities and talk about it.
These international connections and strikes have led to many successes.
Women in a village in Uganda organized and went and met with the local province, the head of the province, and they actually won by saying that they were participating in the global women's strike and that the whole world was going to know about, you know, the impact of his decisions on their lives. They actually won a whole healthcare reform in their area. And women were able to get a whole set of health care needs paid for by the government, which, you know, they didn't have any access to at all before. So that's one example, but there's many more. Another victory was in India. The women were organizing against violence against women. And they took a number of cases of violence and rape against some village women to their local government office and really pressed, because it was, you know, women from bonded labor, you know, who work the farmlands and are completely vulnerable to the landlords. And they actually succeeded in getting a landlord arrested, which was incredible.
Jeanette Hasberg is a volunteer for the Global Women's Strike. She feels that women have little political input. Making your voice heard is difficult when you're busy trying to survive and thrive. But, she adds, when women join forces, their power grows exponentially.
Very often, it isn't until there's a day of recognition like this that women can come together and see how they exist in great numbers and, you know, the impact that they can have. If women worldwide were to boycott something just for one day, we could stop the entire planet.
Since the first International Women's Day in the early 1900s, working women have fought many battles and enjoyed many successes. More women will continue to stress the importance of observing this day so that, eventually, International Women's Day will be less a time to struggle and more a time to celebrate. For the Women's Desk of the National Radio Project, I'm Susan Shelley.
That's it for this Women's Desk edition of Making Contact, a look at women's resistance to globalization. Thanks for listening. Special thanks this week to Laura Lavati for recorded portions and to Dalia Masacci and Graham Russell for translations, Pilar Gonzalez and Susanna Hines for voiceovers. Thanks to Bobby McGee for music. Philip Babich is our managing producer, Laura Lavati, managing director, Peggy Law, executive director, Stephanie Welch and Shireen Marisol Meraji, co-producers, administrative coordinator, Rosalyn Fay, and I'm your host and Women's Desk director, Lisa Rudman. If you want more information about the subject of this week's program, or if you would like to reach any of our guests, call the National Radio Project at 1-800-529-5736. Call that same number for tapes and transcripts. That's 1-800-529-5736. You can also go to our website at radioproject.org. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. Bye for now.